Hey, Woodstock City. I'm standing here on the stage at our church, and it's a little weird because you're not here. Sunday is by far my favorite day of the week, and Sunday morning especially. Now, I know I get paid to be here, but I love being here, and part of why I love being here is because you are usually here with me. I love roaming through the halls and seeing you and your family, so much energy, so much excitement to be back at Woodstock City. And then, of course, we get in here into the auditorium and we sing together, and it's so much fun. But Matt, as you kind of move the camera back, everybody can see there's just something really missing, and what's missing is you. It just feels weird to be in here without you. It feels like, well, it actually feels like a loss. Loss is really important. I want us to spend a couple of sessions talking about loss. Loss is one of those things that really has the ability to affect us, but we often don't know how deep-reaching the effect can be. I know that because I've experienced a couple of losses that I didn't know what to do with, and I'm going to tell you about them. I'm going to tell you about one of them, and you're going to hear it, and you're going to think, what's the big deal? And that's kind of the point. For us to really understand loss, I want to go back to when I was 15 years old. I don't know what you were doing at 15. I was a sophomore in high school. I had just shown up at a brand new school in ninth grade. After that year, that summer, our family moved school districts, and I showed up at a new school. Now, the previous year in ninth grade, I made the JV basketball team. I loved basketball. It was by far my favorite sport. And in ninth grade, I went to a basketball school. I mean, that's what they specialized in. In fact, they didn't really have other sports. They had football, basketball, but basketball was the sport. Multiple county championships, even a few state championships. We had some future NBA players on our high school varsity team. And as a ninth grader, I made the JV team. So when we moved over that summer and I showed up in 10th grade to this new school, it definitely wasn't a basketball school. It was more of a golf and tennis kind of school. So I felt pretty confident as a sophomore, as a 10th grader, about making that JV basketball team. I loved basketball so much. And so when tryouts came out, I was the very first one to sign up. If I remember, I showed up that first night. I didn't really know anybody. I didn't know the coach, but as much as I loved it and as much as I had been playing it and knowing I had made the team last year at the real good basketball school, I wasn't overly worried. So tryouts began. If you've ever tried out for basketball, maybe other sports do this too, you don't even really get a ball out the first few nights. We just ran and we ran and we ran, and I felt like I did pretty good. Most of the people vomited at some point. I never did. Felt good about it. I was in relatively good shape. By night three, we started actually getting the basketballs out and starting having some scrimmages. I'll never forget, halfway through that third night, we were shooting three-pointers. There was this one guy on the team, he was a senior on the varsity team. He was really good. And we were shooting three-pointers, and we both were shooting together, and we made 10 three-pointers in a row. I remember because a crowd even started gathering to watch us. It was like the new kid against the real good varsity player. And so the day that cuts were announced, I was pretty excited. I was nervous, but I was pretty excited. I showed up that morning to school, got there early. The roster for the team was posted on the coach's, you know, door of his office. So I kind of walked into the gym early that day, went straight to his office, looked at the door, and there was the roster, and my name was on that roster. And I felt so good about that. Later that day, though, we all kind of caught word that the coach wanted to have a little bit more tryout. He wasn't completely satisfied with the way the team had kind of come together, maybe the makeup of the team. And so we were going to have one more night of tryouts. Well, coming off of the three-point thing and all the other things that had been going, I don't know, I just felt pretty good about it. And so that next night, we showed up. It didn't go so well, though. That last night of tryouts, I remember so much about it. It's so vivid. I can take you to the exact spot in the gym where I dribbled the ball off my foot on a fast break. I can take you to the exact moment in that gym where somebody threw a pass to me, but I wasn't looking, and it hit me in the arm. I remember so much about that night. I went home after tryouts again, and I didn't feel nearly as confident. I still was very hopeful. I got to school really early that next day. I walked straight into the gym, went to the coach's office, looked on his roster sheet, and I read all the names, and then I read the names again. And my name wasn't on it. I knocked on his door, and he was in the room, Coach Flynn. I said, "Hey, Coach Flynn, can I talk to you?" And he already knew about what. And I said, hey, I felt like things had gone really well. I mean, I had one bad night, but I mean, come on, it's a bad night. And he says to me, Gavin, I get it, but you're new to the school, and all of the other athletes, I just know so much better. They've grown up in the rec league. I've watched them last year, and I just felt like I had to go with the people who I knew. I can't even begin to describe how angry that made me. I was so upset. As a 15-year-old, I stormed out of his office. I went to homeroom. My friends at homeroom were like, what's going on? I couldn't even talk about it. I was so angry. My mom and dad suggested I just sign up for the rec league that year and play rec basketball, and that's what I did. I averaged that year in rec ball 27 and a half points a game. I remember exactly the number, 27.5 points a game. At the end of every single game, the opposing coach would walk up to me and he would say, Gavin, why are you not playing for the school? And every single time I looked back and said, I don't know, you should ask the coach. I was so upset, so frustrated. I decided in that rec league year that I would never, ever, ever allow that to happen to me again. I was never going to get rejected. I was never going to lose, especially in a way that felt kind of unfair. If you fast forward 25 years, my counselor would call that an internal vow. That experience at 15 taught me something. And I didn't want to feel that pain, and I didn't want to feel that rejection, and I never wanted to feel the hurt again. So for 25 years, I lived out of that internal vow. I lived out of that anger. I lived out of that determination. I decided it would never happen to me again. You can get a lot accomplished living out of anger and determination. I got married, had some children out of that. I went angry the whole time, but you know what I mean. I built a pretty good career. I got a few degrees. The whole time, though, just being angry and really, really determined. It's kind of funny, actually, that sometimes that type A kind of thing that we celebrate isn't really always healthy. I came across as really type A, and I am, but it was on steroids. Because a type A personality who refuses to lose, who does whatever it takes to avoid failure, that's a pretty dangerous person. I like left a wake of bodies in my successes. Here's what I think we all need to recognize. There are so many other ways to deal with loss. And the most, probably the best way to figure out how to deal with it is to look at a story, a narrative from Scripture in the book of John. John wrote about this story that he experienced personally. John was one of the disciples. And so everywhere that Jesus went, John went with him. There's this incredible story. If you're a Christian, you've probably heard it before. It's about a guy named Lazarus. Jesus was really good friends with Lazarus and his sisters, Mary and Martha. Jesus is a little ways away, and he hears that Lazarus is sick. Now, this is a pretty big deal because Jesus really loves this guy, and he doesn't really want him to be sick. And in fact, Jesus knows he's dying, and he does die. But when he finds out, he doesn't rush back. Well, let me kind of pick up that story. This is in John chapter 11. We're going to begin in verse 5 if you want to follow along. Here's what John wrote about the story. He says, now Jesus loved Mary and her sister Martha and Lazarus. So when he learned that Lazarus was sick, he stayed where he was. This is kind of funny, right? For two more days. And then he said to his disciples, let's go back to Judea. I won't tell you the whole thing, but it's so funny. You should read it for yourself. There's this really fun interaction between Jesus and the disciples because, you see, the last time they were in Judea, the last time they were there, they were almost killed. They were almost executed. And so they kind of fled from Judea. And so when Jesus says, let's go back to Judea, he says that Lazarus has fallen asleep. His disciples go, well, if he's asleep, maybe he'll just wake back up and we can stay here. And Jesus goes, okay, he's not asleep. He's actually dead. And one of the disciples goes, well, I guess we'll go die along with him. So they get up and they all go back to the house of Lazarus. Of course, when they get there, it's been a few more days. Now, 4 days have passed and Lazarus is dead. He's been buried. The stone of the tomb has been rolled in front. And everybody is so sad. They're weeping, they're mourning. Crowds have gathered of the people who love Mary, Martha, and of course, Lazarus. Well, Jesus shows up. story picks up. Here's what John says. When Mary reached the place where Jesus was and saw him, she fell at his feet, which we do this all the time when we're sad as well. We fall at the feet of Jesus. Even if you don't believe in Jesus, you find yourself praying and hoping that maybe he'll come through. So she falls at Jesus' feet and she says, "Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died." When Jesus saw her weeping and the Jews who had come along with her also weeping, he was deeply moved in spirit and he was troubled. And he asked a question. He says, "Where have you laid him?" he asked. "Come and see, Lord," they replied. And Jesus wept. Then the Jews said, "See how he loved Lazarus." Now, as the story goes, Jesus goes to the tomb and he asks them to roll the stone away. And they all look back and they say, but Lord, his body will stink. It's been 4 days. And so they roll the tomb away, the stone away from the tomb. And Jesus stands there. This is so fun. He prays. And in this moment, he basically says, "God, you know what I need to do. You know what I want you to do. I know you're going to do it. I'm just praying to you so that people will understand that you and I are really connected and that it's through your power that we're about to do this." It's this really funny prayer. At the end of the prayer, Jesus leans into the front of the tomb. And maybe you remember what he says. He says, "Lazarus, Lazarus, come out." And then the dead man came out. His hands and his feet were wrapped with strips of linen and a cloth was around his face. And Jesus said to them, "Take off these grave clothes and let him go." And he did. Lazarus back to life. If you're a Christian, no doubt, you have heard that story multiple times. And we focus on the end of the story, and I mean, rightfully so. When someone comes back to life, that is worth paying attention to. And that's why we always focus on Lazarus. But in this story, there's something that happens in the very middle of it that is so critical for us to understand. It's in verse 35, where it just says that Jesus wept. Jesus wept. This is so important. What's so important about this moment is that Jesus knew exactly what he was going to do. He knew that he was about to raise one of his best, closest friends back to life. He knew that all the weeping didn't need to continue. He knew all that. But instead of blowing past all of it, he decided to engage in it. See, what Jesus actually chose to feel here was grief. Jesus felt, he allowed himself to grieve. And he didn't just blow past that feeling of loss. He kind of allowed himself to sit in the middle of that loss. Jesus allowed himself to feel the pain and the sadness of loss. And that's really important for us to understand. And here's the thing about grief, though, right? Unfortunately, we've been led to associate grief with death, kind of like we see here with Lazarus and Jesus. And we've all experienced a death of some kind, a friend, a loved one, and we grieved that death. We were told to do that. We knew to do that. But what we don't actually understand, at least a lot of us, I know I haven't, is that grief isn't just about death. Grief is actually about loss. What we're actually grieving is the loss associated with the death. And this is important to know. Every loss is a death. Every single loss that we experience is a kind of death. Now, of course, a physical death is absolutely a loss. That's the one that we're most familiar with. But every single loss is a death. And you know what happens when there's a death, right? We bury it. Every loss is a death, and every death eventually gets buried. Every single death gets buried. Now, here's why this is so important. Because when we experience a loss, eventually that loss, that death, is gonna be buried. And we have an option to grieve it. And if we can grieve the loss before we bury it, we can bury it dead. And when we bury a loss dead, it rests in peace. Of course, the other side of it is that we don't grieve it. And that's typically what we do. We don't know we're supposed to. So we experience a loss, but we don't know to grieve it. And so we have these ungrieved losses But ungrieved losses are really dangerous. Ungrieved losses are buried alive. And if horror movies have taught us anything, anything that's buried alive, when it comes back, it's way meaner and way angrier. And this is the same thing with ungrieved losses. That ungrieved loss that we're experiencing is a death that we bury. But if we don't grieve it, it gets buried alive and it leaves it without any peace. And it leaves us without any peace. Worse, it doesn't stay in the grave. It comes back out and it follows us and it haunts us. And it doesn't just haunt us in the moment, it haunts us for a long time, maybe 25 years long, like it did me. That's the danger of ungrieved losses. It affects every aspect of our life. It makes everything more complicated. And when you try to pinpoint where the complication and frustration is coming from, it's so hard to know because it was an ungrieved loss in your past. See, only ungrieved losses can, only losses that are grieved can actually rest in peace. It's so important. Only losses that are grieved can rest in peace. But you see, we don't really know that. And if there's ever been a moment to learn it, it is now. Because as we speak in this pandemic season, we are experiencing more losses than maybe ever in our life combined. Think about how many different kinds of things we have lost over the past few months. Here's just a few of those things. We've lost jobs. All of us have lost 401ks, at least to some extent. But we've lost vacations, graduation ceremonies. Some of you have lost summer camps, fifth grade school walks. Did you know that at the end of fifth grade, those children get to walk around the school? It's like a graduation ceremony. Their last time walking the schools of their elementary. They haven't been able to do that. They lost that. Birthday parties, friendships, dance recitals. And this is why this list is so important. Because when we think about grief and we think about loss, we typically think about death. We don't think about these kinds of things. But every single loss is a death, which means every single loss will eventually be buried. And we have a choice to grieve these losses and allow them to be buried dead and rest in peace, or we can do what we typically do when we experience loss. We try to minimize it or we try to medicate it. But that's actually our temptation when we experience a loss. We medicate losses because medicating a loss numbs the pain, whether it's a substance or an alcohol or binge eating or, in my case, an internal vow. But those are just examples of how we medicate to numb the loss. But you know as well as I do that when you numb the pain of loss, the loss doesn't go away. The feeling in the moment goes away, but it's just temporary because you can't stay numb forever. And the pain just keeps coming back. You know, there are other temptation with all of these losses is just to minimize it, to say it doesn't really matter. It's not a really a big deal. And listen, I get it. When I look at this list, I think, well, yeah, job, that's a big deal. 401k, it's kind of a big deal. But, summer camp? There's going to be another summer. It's just one summer, right? A dance recital? There's a bunch more of those. You missed one. What's the big deal? It's such a big deal. Because every loss matters. Because every loss is going to be buried. And the ones that we grieve, we can bury dead and they can rest in peace. But if we don't grieve the loss, it's still going to get buried. It's just going to be buried alive. And it's going to come back. And it's going to haunt. It's going to haunt us in our future. It's going to follow us everywhere we go. It's going to affect every part of our life. The reason I know that's true is because that's exactly what my experience was. When I was 15, no one told me that my reaction to being cut from the JV basketball team was to grieve that loss. No one told me to grieve that loss. They actually told me a lot of the opposite. It doesn't matter. You can play rec ball. It's not a big deal. One day you'll be 45 and you won't even care about JV basketball. And in some respects, I get it. That's kind of true. But in a very real way, it's also not true. Because at 15, basketball was the most important thing to me. And I lost it. But I didn't know I was supposed to grieve it. So I buried it, but it got buried alive. And listen, for 25 years, I became really competitive, kinda angry, super determined, all because of an unhealthy loss that I never knew I was supposed to grieve. And I get the hesitation. We don't wanna grieve stuff. We hate grieving stuff. And the reason we don't wanna grieve is because we don't wanna feel that emotion. We like to keep emotion somewhere over there, not in here. But we really don't have much of a choice when you think about it. When we experience a loss, no matter how big it is, whether it feels significant to you or even if it feels like it shouldn't be, it is. And when we experience a loss, we really only have two choices. We can grieve it, we can allow ourselves to feel it, to experience it, and to eventually move past it. Or we can choose not to. But here's the promise, and I'm just telling you this from my own personal experience. If you don't grieve loss now, it will come back and create grief for you later. It's a guarantee. You can either grieve the loss now, or you can medicate it or minimize it and ignore it, but it won't go away. And if you grieve it now, you can bury it dead and it will rest in peace. But if you don't grieve it, those ungrieved losses are gonna come back and they are gonna create incredible grief for you later. And the people around you too. See, your present situation, these present losses, they really can't become a part of your past if they continue to persist in your future. Nothing in our past is really in our past if it's still present with us today. And if these losses that we're racking up, if we really do want them to become a part of a story that we tell from our past, the only way for that to happen is for us to choose to start grieving them now. So what does it look like to grieve a loss? Well, it's not that complicated. It's to acknowledge that it matters. It's to name it as a loss. Call it by name. Talk about it. Find people who have experienced grief before. Engage with them in it. This is the hard part, but allow yourself to feel the pain, to feel the sadness. And when you begin to feel it, I know the temptation, you're gonna wanna minimize it, you're gonna wanna medicate that in some way, but don't do that. Because when you do it, it doesn't allow the grief to actually go on the journey, and it doesn't allow it to become something that you can bury in peace. It took me a long time to learn that lesson. Gosh, if I could take you back during those 25 years, so many things I missed out on because I was afraid of failure. So many things I never tried because I wasn't sure I could win. Man, I remember being at the beach one time. I'd never been on a paddleboard. And my wife said, hey, why don't you rent a paddleboard and you can go out in the Gulf, it'll be so fun. I went and checked on it. It was, you know, I can't remember, $50. I came back and she said, how much is it? I said, it's $50. She goes, oh, well, that's fine, we should do it. And I said, nah, $50 is a lot of money for paddleboarding. You know the real reason I didn't paddleboard? Because I had made an internal vow. I didn't want to fail at paddleboarding. I don't even know if you can fail at paddleboarding, but this is how big of a deal ungrieved losses can be. I don't want that to be your story. I don't want 2020 to be the year that you accumulated loss and didn't know what to do with it. And so you medicated it and you minimized it and you made these internal vows that are gonna haunt you for decades to come. Let's just not do that. Let's grieve the losses, every single one of them, so that we can bury them dead and so that they can rest in peace. If you want to actually live free from your past, you have to grieve the losses. And it's never fun to grieve. But can I tell you what's way less fun? Living out of an ungrieved loss. And you don't wanna do that. So here's what we're gonna do. That's kind of the beginning of good grief. We're gonna come back and it's actually just gonna be digital. It's gonna be on our website, all of our podcasts, all of our channels. There's two more elements of this that I want us to talk about, but this is really getting us started. And so I'd love for you to come back, check out the other two parts. They're all gonna be available when you hear this one. You can just continue to listen if you want. But before you do that, I'd love to take a second and can we just pray about these losses together? And can we just pray that we'll have the wisdom to follow Jesus' example? That we can decide to not ignore them, to not blow past them, but to just sit with them for a minute and allow ourselves to grieve them. so that we can move past them. Let's pray for a second. Heavenly Father, gosh, thank you that you allowed Jesus to do what he did. I mean, in a way, it doesn't make sense because, I mean, he knew what was going to happen. He knew that Lazarus was going to come back to life. But instead of just moving to that, he decided to sit in the pain and in the sadness, which is so beautiful and wonderful to know. And here's why, because it teaches us that we need to do it. It also teaches us that you know what we feel when we do it. So when we grieve, we're not just grieving alone, you're grieving with us because you know what it feels like. So God, just give us the wisdom to understand all the different losses that we've experienced. If we've minimized any from our past, just bring those back up. It seems weird to pray that, but I pray you bring it back to our minds and our hearts so we can grieve those things from the past too, so that we can move past them, so they don't bother us and haunt us for the rest of our lives. God, thank you for being the kind of God that resurrects our lives and that allows us when we experience loss to find hope and to find peace. And thank you that even though grief is challenging, that we don't have to go through it alone. And on the other side of that journey is freedom and peace. Jesus, we love you so much. Thank you for displaying this for us in such a powerful way. And we pray this in your name. Amen.